Swaggin' and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Ewart. And Brooke Ewart.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Ewart and Mike Salk.
And the fire!
All right, let's go. It is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, and podcast platforms everywhere, wherever you find them. Not just across the universe, but across the multiverse. We'll find you in whatever universe you're in.
Multiverses to Justin and I before we went.
Well, I saw Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse over the weekend. One of the better movies I've seen in years. Great to be at the movies. Worth seeing at the big theater. All of that. So,
IMAX and the whole thing?
I didn't do IMAX. No, I get... Yeah, it's too much for me. Just give me a nice, stadium seating. Right, that's all I ask for. Just a nice stadium seating situation.
This was the multiverse. This is across.
Across the Spider-Verse, even.
Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I mean, it's the multiverse, but, with a Spider-Man twist.
Okay.
Anyway, well worth your time if you have if you got kids or even if you don't, honestly. I think Heather and I liked it more than the kids did. So, anyway, not the point. I think there are some people who were interested in hearing about the state of the Seattle Mariners, which at the moment is not good. In fact,
No. It's
quite bad. In fact, it's horrible. In fact, it's teetering on the edge of absolute disaster.
Yes.
It's not there yet. I know that everybody wants to, as soon as you get the opportunity, declare the season over, declare this the worst roster in history. And by the way, they might end up there. This might be one of those teams that we hate. It might be. They might continue to implode. They might continue to fall off this cliff. They might end up below 500. They might end up disappointing everybody who had high expectations for them and satisfying those that thought that they would be not as good as others did this year. That may very well happen. They don't look good. They're not playing well. And it's not just now that they're not hitting. They're not playing good baseball anymore. For a while, they were. They weren't hitting, but they were playing pretty good baseball. Defense has been good, right? Pitching, obviously, was outstanding. This weekend, last six games, mental mistakes, base running issues, the occasional defensive lapse, although that's not been a huge problem for this team. But they play without much emotion. They play without much life. They play without much energy. And it's always, always hard to judge those things when you're not hitting, because every team that doesn't hit looks flat. Every team that doesn't hit looks energetic or looks non-energetic, lifeless. And every team where your pitcher gives up seven runs in the first couple of innings, generally, doesn't look all that good either, especially when they haven't had the kind of offense that they need to come back in those situations. So it's always, always hard to judge effort, to judge energy, to judge any of that. And I know that there's a lot of good guys on this team. But right now, while all of those guys may be likable in and of themselves individually, this team is not likable. This team is not playing good baseball. This team is not playing better than a collection of individuals. They are playing worse than that collection because each guy is underperforming. The moves they made in this offseason have universally flopped offensively. Universally flopped offensively. Starting with Teoscar Hernandez, continuing to Colton Wong, absolutely put A.J. Pollock's name on this list. Arguably, he's been worse than any of them, other than the guys who aren't even with the team anymore. And I know that there's a lot of people who want to dunk on Tommy LaStella signing, et cetera. I'm not going to go on that one because I think Tommy LaStella was never really supposed to be here. But Cooper Hummel was a guy that they acquired, and he's not playing well either, and obviously was sent down ages ago with very little hope of coming back. So right now, this morning, things feel bad, as they should. They are bad. This is not a good spot for this team to be in. Fortunately, they're only 5.5 games back in the wild card. The season isn't done yet. They haven't played that badly for so long that they've made it impossible for themselves. But they have absolutely dug a hole. They've absolutely made this hard. And I would say that in the next week or so, they've put themselves in a position where if they don't play well and they continue to slide, they could end their season before summer. Think about that.
The hole gets too deep.
Yeah, they're not there yet. I mean, look, I know everybody wants to rush to conclusions in a baseball season, and congratulations. You thought they were bad before I did. Awesome.
By the way, we'll get into later that that's what you think this is about. We're going to let the people have a voice today.
Oh, as we should. I'm ready to be dunked on.
You know why people are mad at you? I don't think you do. I think what you just said is what you think you know how everybody else feels.
How do
people?
Why?
I think we let people today tell you how they've been perceiving what you've been saying, because you have been summing up how you think Mariners fans feel.
Okay, what do you think? What do you think I think versus what do you think people feel?
I don't think anyone is like basking in this team not performing. You think that people like have some kind of weird satisfaction out of it.
I do.
I don't think that's true at all.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes when you've had your heart broken so many times, you have this guard up where you have this like, well, yep, there we go again. That's not satisfaction. That's pain.
I think it's a little bit of both. But regardless, I think what we're seeing is a team that has completely underperformed in every way. They have.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to dispute that. I think that they're underperforming and getting bad results despite a process that was fine. I think the big disagreement is on process. I think the process was good. I still do. I'm not changing my mind on that. I think they had a good process. I think the execution and the results were terrible. That's really what this debate is about. It's about process. And I'm not backing off my belief in the Mariners' process. I think it was good. Last year, right now, the poster child is the Rangers, right? The Rangers are the team that everybody's all excited about. And they went out and they spent a ton of money last year, right? And then they spent a little bit more this year. Last year, they were terrible, right? Last year, they were awful. Why? Baseball's not in a straight line. We talked about this a little bit last week, right? Baseball doesn't just work the way you want it to. A 300 hitter might be hit 250 this year and 350 the next year, and he's a 300 hitter, but in each one of those seasons, he was two completely different players. That's the oddity of baseball. Last year, the Rangers went out and did what so many Mariners fans wanted the Mariners to do, and it was an awful decision. The players did not hit, did not work, some got hurt, others didn't come together. Right? This year, it is coming together for them, and it looks like the right strategy. The Phillies went out this year and spent more and more and more and more. Right now, it's a disaster. Maybe they'll have enough money in the bank to be able to ride it out. Maybe not. Same with the Padres. The Mets will definitely have enough money in the bank to ride it out, but that's kind of a different story. The point is, baseball's nonlinear. So last year, the Mariners took the same approach that they took this year, and they look like geniuses. This year, they took the same approach, and right now, they look foolish.
But I feel like we were told last year, like, now that we've crossed this threshold, we're going to go all in, and people didn't feel like they did that.
Yeah, and I think that they believe that they did in their own way, that they went all in when they got Luis Castillo, that they went all in as they continued to build up their pitching. They believe that they did. That's their belief. I kind of understand that process and what they believe works. And as I look around the guys that are out there that signed for big money, A, I don't think a lot of them were going to come here. And B, I don't think many of them are playing up to the level that everybody wanted. I don't think the issue is what people said it was, which is spending money in free agency. I think the issue is the guys that were here, the core, the nucleus of this team has been worse than it was a year ago. And the guys that they did bring in, by the way, guys with good track records, some of whom are getting paid a significant chunk of change, have been awful. That's still on Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander. Don't get me wrong. That's on them. It's up to them to bring in the right guys. Ultimately, that's their job. They've brought in the wrong guys. But I don't think it's because the process was flawed. I don't think it's because they should have spent more money. I think they should have gotten better players for the money they spent.
Well, I think people are upset about that, too. I don't think every single person out there thinks they didn't spend enough money.
I don't either. And I'm not arguing with those folks that have the same opinion as me. But I don't think it's... I don't
of course
think,
you're not.
I'm not. But I don't think the Mariners needed to spend more. I think they needed to do better. And that's a huge, gigantic difference. The guys they brought in have good track records and have been bad.
Yeah, there's no debating that.
I mean, like, they've been bad. Every one of them. To a man, it's unbelievable how bad they've been. So, yes, more. We will have a chance for people to dunk on me at 8:30. I am excited. Maybe we'll create a whole dunk tank. We could throw water at me or water balloons, if the case may be. If it wasn't so damn cold in this studio, I'd be fine with it. But then, yeah, I'll probably catch a cold, and then Brock will have to be in here by himself the rest of the week. So we'll have to come up with something. All right, we'll be right back with everything you need to know. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it was the one thing they couldn't do this weekend, and then it's exactly what they did. Swept out of Texas. Awful baseball. Blown out twice. The Mariners did not play well at all.
We're not playing, winning baseball against top flight teams. They are a top flight team based on the start they're off to this year, and you have to give them credit. Again, it's one of the best offenses we've seen all year. So a ton of credit there. And on the flip side, we didn't pitch our best or play our best in this series. So it's really a combination of both.
Yeah, they played like absolute garbage, and that's how they ended up getting swept and blown out in the final two games of the series. So now what? Are they going to hit? Are they going to show up? Scott Servais says they've struggled to do that all year long.
Certainly it's been a struggle for us to put runs up consistently at any point for the season. We've had stretches here or there, and we start to get it going a little bit, but it's up and down the lineup. That's what it takes. If you're not hitting a ton of home runs, it just takes consistent at-bats, and we need to get it going. There's no question about that. Again, it's not for lack of effort. I think, when you're not hitting, it looks like you're not trying. I think guys are trying. We're not executing, whether it's getting the guy in for third, whether it's having a really good at-bat, in a critical part of the game. It's not going our way, and we have to do better in those situations.
Yeah, what do they do now? Do they have the guts to play up to their talent level, which is certainly a lot higher than this? Or do they let this weekend destroy a season that certainly had lots of promise and has never gotten untracked? They'll go to San Diego and try to figure that out starting, tonight, tomorrow. The details, a close shutout loss on Friday, blown out Saturday, 16-6. Brian Wu absolutely destroyed in his major league debut. And then a 12-3 whooping to finish off the weekend yesterday. Bryce Miller knocked out early for the second straight game. Things are in a bad, bad way for these Mariners.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Oh, and just to make it a little insult to injury, or in this case, injury to insult, injuries are starting to mount. Marco Gonzalez missed his start on Saturday with forearm soreness in his left pitching arm. Never a good thing. Could be a non-issue, but it also could be the precursor to Tommy John. No way to know yet, and waiting to find out the results, but certainly makes this rotation feel very young in addition to the offensive problems as well. You saw that over the weekend. And then Chris Flexen, who in theory was supposed to be the guy who was giving you depth, has done absolutely nothing to show he needs to be back in the rotation as he continues to get shelled each time he's been used in mostly a mop-up role. Still no sign of Dylan Moore. He remains on a rehab assignment. Originally thought we could see him last week, but no go. Same with Andres Munoz, who was expected back in the last homestand. He's still rehabbing in Tacoma, though he pitched again last night, so maybe he is getting closer. And then J.P. Crawford, who's been one of your only consistent performers all year, had to have the day off yesterday after knocking knees. Here's Scott Servais.
Yeah, it's banged. It's a contusion thing. I think he's going to be okay. We'll have to wait and see how it is, for tomorrow's game. But, just a funky play. It happens. A crazy game. A lot of crazy, wild plays in that game.
Yeah, but unfortunately, again, crazy wild plays that all went against this team, and you make your own breaks in this world, and they have not been able to make nearly enough of them this season.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, big week for the Seahawks. They start their mandatory minicamp practices tomorrow. A little more serious than what we saw over the last few weeks of voluntary, but they're still not going to have the hardcore scrimmaging or the hitting of training camp or anything like that. Pete Carroll, of course, just happy where his team is at.
We're going. We're rocking along here. This the tempo of our days and stacking good days after good days has been a good sign for us. We're on the move. Things feel like we're making progress. We're getting to see the young guys and getting them plenty of turns to start gathering information, and they seem to be assimilating well. Some of the free agent guys also. And so everything's really on the ups right now. So we're really happy about what's happening. I got a couple guys we're waiting to get back and injury-wise, but other than that, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see those guys starting tomorrow. Tough end for the Husky softball team after a great run. They beat Utah Friday. Excuse me, but then lost two straight to Florida State and Stanford. And then two awesome stories in golf this weekend. Victor Hovland won the Memorial in a playoff yesterday, beating a stacked field. Today, he's caddying for his college teammate from Oklahoma State and good friend. And by the way, 36 holes, not just 18. He's going to carry his bag for 36 holes today.
That's awesome, actually.
In U.S. Open qualifying, fifth-ranked player in the world. Pretty cool. Meanwhile, Stanford women's star Rose Zhang turned pro last week. This weekend, she played in her first tournament. Yesterday, she won it, the Mizuho Women's Open. She's the first LPGA player, excuse me, in 72 years to win her debut on tour. It happened in the early 1950s. Pretty crazy. That's everything you need to know. We'll do that quarter past every hour. I'm going to talk a little more about Rose Zhang later because she's, first of all, awesome. But second of all, I think there's a way to kind of make it relevant to what we're seeing with the Mariners. I think what's so cool about her is that in a day and age where expectations are so challenging, especially for individuals, but for teams as well, she lives up to them, right? I mean, she
the moment. Nothing's too big.
I mean, exactly the opposite, right? She has been like, she craves the moment. She wins every major, you know, amateur honor there is to win. Last week, literally 13 days before winning the tournament yesterday, she, with her Stanford teammates, win the NCAA championship as a team. And then 13 days later, she wins her first ever LPGA tournament.
Did she declare pro half a week before?
Yeah. Like, she declared pro. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. I think it was like early last week. She said, yep, I'm going pro. And then,
5 days later.
5 days later, like, oh, now I've won a pro event. Now I have an LPGA tour card.
One for one.
Dude, she is phenomenal. And she's a tremendous putter. She's super clutch. She didn't have a great day yesterday, kind of similar to how she ended up winning the women's masters thing that they did this past year. Like, sort of the same thing where she just didn't have her best stuff, but she just finds a way to go out and beat people.
Is there a little bit of a you don't know what you don't know kind of there, too, where it's like,
I don't think so with her. Like, it doesn't seem that way. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, who knows, right? We've seen people who come in and I mean, Jordan Spieth was like this right at the beginning of his career, and he just kept winning and winning, and then it felt like the weight and expectation of that all of the sudden
caught
up to him like a wave, and he went through a period where he didn't win for quite some time, and he's never fully gotten himself out of it. I hope that doesn't happen to her because she is tremendous. Just really cool to watch and a really great story yesterday for women's golf. All right. Let's see. Coming up, Maura is going to take us around the weekend. It wasn't just a couple of or three awful Mariner losses, although they're certainly going to play a role in around the weekend. We had a few other things going
Did
on
I
as
have
well.
To?
I know. Yeah. We'll see how long this is going to be, like a torture segment. It's like, okay, how long can we handle it before we just have to move on to the next thing? We'll do it next.
Very quick summer.
Maura will make it fun. I promise. It's Brock and Salk. Seattle Sports on 710. SeattleSports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, hopefully you were able to get outside. Hopefully you were able to get away from some of the terrible baseball that was on television for the Mariners this weekend. It was bad, and tried watching at various points, tried listening at various points, had to turn it off because it just was non-competitive, and that's just not what anybody's looking for. So Maura has the unenviable task of taking us through a weekend that was not spectacular, certainly from a baseball perspective, but did have some other redeeming qualities. No, this isn't just going to be a weather report, but somehow Maura has gonna thread the needle and figure out how to make this entertaining.
For a walk on Saturday, where it's like, let's just go park at Gasworks and just walk around.
Okay.
And checked out that giant yacht that's on Lake Union. Have you seen that thing?
No.
Do a quick Google on that.
Like gigantic?
Bonkers. It has like 6 or 7 decks. I mean, it's massive. It's the CEO, or the, I think it's the guy who started BlackBerry.
Okay.
That's who owns it. I'll look it up to get some numbers for you here in a minute. But
he gets to keep all his stuff, huh? Even after BlackBerry is no longer a thing, he still gets to keep all his toys.
It's like Tom from MySpace. He's still at the right time.
Absolutely. Life's all about timing, don't we all know? Speaking of which, Maura, what happened this weekend?
All right. This is my short but sweet summary.
Okay.
The Mariners lost and then lost again and then lost again. They were outscored 30-9 by the Rangers this weekend. Luis Castillo pitched a gem Friday night, only giving up 1 hit through 7 innings, but they still lost 2-0. Saturday, Brian Wu got the start with Marco moved to IL, and he gave up 6 runs in 2 innings. They ended up losing 16-6. Sunday, Bryce Miller gave up 7 hits in 2 1/3 innings, and the Mariners offense didn't score until the 7th when the Rangers had already scored 12 runs. So that's the Mariners weekend.
Great.
All right.
So Brock will be in a half hour. We've got 30 straight minutes of commercials for you guys, and then we'll be back.
I want to get your guys' thoughts on, because I know we had the debate over Marco and whether he's the right guy for the 5th spot a couple weeks ago. But I do think Brian Wu came up and obviously had a tough start against one of the better lineups right now. He could be fine moving forward, but it does make me nervous to rely on so many young guys in your rotation. Like DePoto told us last week that he thought Bryce Miller was tired after that Yankees start. They've been incredibly lucky, I think, that Gilbert and Kirby have been able to be as incredible as they have. I just keep using that word.
Well, it makes sense. Like, you'd use the word incredible a lot after watching the Mariners this weekend. I can see why it's stuck in your head.
Yeah, just in my head.
Yeah.
But how nervous does it make you if this isn't for Marco moving forward?
No, very nervous. I mean, that's a lot of youth in one rotation, and sometimes youth is helpful, right? It's good to get an injection of youth. But if you got too much of it, it starts to become a challenge. And no different from what we've been talking about with the Seahawks this year, right? Where a lot of guys you're looking at go, man, I'm going to count on this. I'm going to count on that. Well, that's a lot of youth that you're counting on. And it just doesn't always work the way you want it to. In baseball, baseball's so freaking hard to predict in general, right? I mean, you can feel like a guy is going to be consistent one way or another, and you catch him in the wrong season and he's a completely different ball player than he's been. But with young players, first of all, they've never done it in the big leagues, so you have no idea what that's going to look like for them. But maybe more importantly, they do tend to be less consistent, and that's been a big problem for the Mariners this year in general. It's just been consistency. Right now, you're starting to see it show up in the rotation with a bunch of guys that I think are starting to get tired, just as we talked about, from needing to carry the water for as long as they did and needing to be so fine. Eventually, that takes a toll, right? In baseball, they often talk about the difference between pitch count and pitches made under stress. And I think one of the challenges the Mariners have had this year is that a lot of pitches have been made under stress. You can have pitches under stress for two reasons. They can come because you put guys on base and you need to be extra fine in order to get out of those jams. Or they can come because the score is close all the time, right? And you're concerned that your offense is never going to score a run. And unfortunately, I think that's what we've seen more of for the Mariners this year has been the latter. And yeah, it's probably going to take its toll on the young guys before it does on the Luis Castillo. Or a Marco, right? I mean, and go back and remember what Scott was saying not that long ago, beginning of this season, right? About how important it was for Marco and why they put him 4th in the rotation rather than 5th, is they wanted those innings that they knew they could count on leading into the next start from, at that point, I think it was Kirby, right? Who they had 5th. All of a sudden, you know, fast forward a couple of months, Kirby's the guy you're like, man, I can't wait till he's back out there again. And it's Bryce Miller and now maybe Brian Wu who are going to need those innings eaten up before they go out there.
Yeah. And the way things were going this weekend, I'm very confident that Marco probably would have gotten shelled too.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, he is pretty solid against most teams that aren't, you know, the Rangers, the Red Sox, like to give you at least 5 or 6 innings.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a challenge. There's no doubt that will be a challenge for them moving forward. And the guy that I thought, and I don't think I'm alone, but the guy I thought was going to provide all the depth they needed was Chris Flexen.
Yeah.
He's been terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely awful, like, unusable. So, it's not a problem yet. But it is absolutely lurking out there as a concern.
Okay. Well, we really will move on from the
just because you need more concerns.
Yeah. Unfortunately, for your UW softball loss this weekend, too, they kicked off their visit to the Women's College World Series with a 4-1 win over Utah Friday. But Saturday, they lost 3-1 to FSU, which set up an elimination game with Pac-12 rival Stanford yesterday. They found themselves in a pitching duel with UW's Ruby Milan, and Stanford's Najari Kanade, both dealing. Kanade struck out 9, allowing 1 hit and no walks. Malin only gave up 4 hits, striking out 5 and giving up no earned runs. Unfortunately, one run would score after a throwing error with 2 outs in the 6th, and that would be enough for a 1-0 win to send Stanford to the semifinals. They will face Oklahoma on Monday, who are the back-to-back defending champs.
Ah.
I think they've won like 50-something games in a row
The UConn of softball.
Yeah, a little bit of a bust. there are 4 fifth-year seniors on the team, and they are on the UW's team, and they're some of the top players: Bailey Klingler, Sammy Reynolds, Madison Husky, and Silent Rain Espinoza. Coach Heather Tarr spoke about them moving on post-game.
Maddie Husky and Silent Rain starting, and Sammy Reynolds starting in our lineup as freshmen, thinking like, you know, they were in Sydney Stewart's shoes. They were clueless sometimes, like, where am I? What am I doing? And how do I hit at this stage? And now to see them, you know, like, they're refined, they're confident. It just gives you hope when you develop younger ones. There's a model. So we're just proud of them, excited to try to do it better than they did it next year.
And Coach Tarr really has built quite the model over there. They seem to
every year
always. I mean, it's crazy to think they're losing this much talent. And yeah, she just always seems to find a way to put another great.
She does. It's amazing what happens when you can build a culture in college sports. Mm-hmm. You can kind of keep it going for a long time, right? It's Brock and I used to have these conversations about how in college sports, more than anything else, perception kind of turns into reality. If you're a place where the perception is everybody wants to be and you got a chance to win and this and that, the reality is it will continue because young players want to continue that cycle. You know, if you're Gino Auriemma or whoever it is who's built up that, or Pat Summitt for years, who's built up that level of success, it's easier to sustain it. What's always amazing to me is when somebody starts it new and starts it fresh and is able to get it done for the first time to start a dynasty like that. And maybe that will be Heather Tarr. She certainly seems to have something going with that culture at UW that has absolutely worked, continues to attract premier players, and then gets them to perform once they're here. So kudos to her. I think that's an underrated, cool, and amazing accomplishment in sports, is starting off and getting something going for a college program.
Agreed. And congrats to them on a great season.
We watched some of that in the sports pit on Friday before we left, and I had Larry Salk ruled it.
Oh, really?
The 6th, they scored one more run. I'm like, this is what I'm doing.
See you later. No upside in watching this. See you later. Go
they
home.
They did win that one.
They did?
Yeah.
Just happy I got to follow that.
It's good thing
works.
You Larry Salked it.
That's right.
They might have lost otherwise.
All right, we'll move into some football. Greg Bishop of SI joined us last week and discussed the Eagles coming closer than we may have realized to trading for Russell Wilson. That news kind of blew up over the weekend as Seattle, Denver, and Philadelphia media outlets ran with it. So we'll revisit that a little bit. This is what Greg said with us last Wednesday.
I think what I'd say is the Eagles really wanted him. I think they liked his style of play, and I think that makes sense, right? Because, you know, it's similar to Jalen Hurts, mm-hmm. especially when he was, you know, in his prime and a little bit faster, I think, than now. And, yeah, my understanding is, you know, at that point in time, Russ wanted to stay here. And then ultimately that's not what happened. But the Eagles were going gangbusters after quarterbacks for a couple years. And until Jalen, you know, they went into last season essentially saying, we're going to give him everything he needs so we can truly evaluate him. And then he showed himself to be what you thought coming out of the draft.
So when do you think this was?
That the Eagles and Seahawks talked?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was immediately before the Broncos Denver. Trade. I mean, my understanding of this story.
Do you believe that Russ still wanted to stay at that point?
No, I think Russ didn't want to go to Philly.
That's what I think, too.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. I wasn't trying to say Russ wanted to stay. Greg said that.
Yeah.
I don't agree with him on that. No. What I have sort of heard rumored is that, and this is not a report. I'm not reporting this. But what I have always sort of been under the impression of, and what I've heard sort of rumbling-wise, is that they had a deal done with Philadelphia. They agreed to a deal. John Schneider and Howie Roseman agreed to a deal. that would send Russ to Philadelphia for whatever it was, a package that included however many first round picks, and, you know, probably not dissimilar to the deal that they ended up getting from Denver, maybe even a little bit better, right? Because they had more leverage at that point because there were more teams that were open to them. So they had a package in place.
Jalen Hurts instead of Drew Lock. Sorry, Drew Lock.
Yeah, it would have been Jalen Hurts instead of Drew Lock. Two guys that at that stage in their career, right, both second round picks near the end of their rookie contracts. Lock had had, you know, not, I mean, there was this idea that he'd had success his rookie year before things got awry for him. And Jalen Hurts, kind of the same thing, right? He had had some success, but certainly he had not yet fully developed into the player that he showed himself to be last year. And that Russ said no. He had a no trade clause. Russ could say no to any trade he wanted, and he didn't want to go to Philadelphia. Thank God for him. Can you imagine if Russ, and thank God for Philadelphia. Can you imagine if Russ had gone to Philadelphia and played the way he did last year? I mean, it would have been everything that it was in Denver, but worse.
Late clock was bad.
I know.
And who knows how it would have gone. I mean, I still think his play was bad last year, but I think he purposely went somewhere where he could he could know that he was going to have power.
True.
New coach, new. So I don't know if he would have gotten away with all of that in Philly.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. He may have been. That's a very good point. You know what? I agree with that. It might not have gone as badly, but
yeah, there were still some issues with just his.
Yeah. And the personality stuff that came out, I think that would have been even magnified more so if he had been in Philadelphia. Like, instead of each, you know, counting down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 with a play clock, it had been like a different battery. Like, you get a double A and then a triple A and then a C battery.
Yeah, those fans don't play.
They don't mess around. So, look, I don't know exactly how all of that went down. Again, I'm not a reporter. I'm not reporting this or anything like that. But the stories that I've heard are that Russ is the one who killed that deal because he didn't want to go to Philadelphia. Everybody else was ready. They were good to go.
Wanted to stay here, and then within like a month or
so. No, he didn't want to stay here. No.
I think that was made clear when they leaked the places that he would like to play before the season started.
That is not what happened.
If he was traded.
Russell Wilson did not want to stay here.
Yes.
He wanted to go, but he also wanted to choose where he was going, and that was not Philadelphia. Ultimately, it was Denver, and that's why the Seahawks, I think they could have gotten even more for Russ if he hadn't, you know, the no trade clause that was able to, you know, limit. We talked about this at the time. The no trade clause was able to limit the choices of who John could negotiate with. And if you're the Broncos, you're going, hey, man, he's already said no to these other teams. So either you say yes to this deal or forget it. They still got a pretty good job done. I mean, credit to John Schneider for what he did, considering some of the parameters that he was forced to work under.
Well, now they think they got hoodwinked.
The Broncos?
Yeah.
Well, so far they did.
Yeah, prove it.
And he may end up having more success this year.
At first, people thought they didn't get enough in return, and now people think they pulled off a heist.
It really is remarkable. He may be better off this year. I mean, again, Moore, I think you make a good point about what it would be like if he had gone someplace where the coach had been in charge instead of letting him be in charge. And that's going to happen this year. That may end up absolutely turning this entire narrative around, and we'll start talking about how Russ is a great quarterback when he's used the right way again, or maybe not. I have no clue what's going to happen there this year.
Secret war behind the scenes, taking shots at each other through other channels, and it'll be a mess.
That would be very entertaining.
Greg Bishop piece, though, really took off. When I saw it on the Rich Eisen show later in the week.
Oh, really?
Wow, man, these people really picked this up.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even know all of that.
We didn't cover something he said on our own show well enough.
I thought we had already knew that. Didn't we all know that?
I thought that wasn't breaking news either.
I remembered you saying it months before.
Right. Like, I feel like we've talked about that for a long time. It's so weird when that stuff happens. It's like, oh, I thought that was a given.
Yeah.
People think you just made it up.
Oh, they do? All right, maybe I did. But you don't know whether I did or not. I'm not a reporter. I'm not bound.
Greg Bishop says it's legit.
I could have made it up. Hey, here's another one for you. Russell Wilson was actually in a deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We've got Trevor Lawrence.
For Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's not true. All right. You think I'm like Baker Breadman or something here? Just like out making up rumors?
The aficionado.
I might be. You'll never know.
Stud Rebel.
All right. Let's do a little NBA. The Heat defeated the Nuggets 111-108 to tie that series.
This is 1-1. How bad the Mariners are. We're forced to talk about the freaking NBA.
I'm actually not going to go too far into the details of that.
Thank God.
Other than that, I don't know. Do we feel bad enough for our brethren in Denver now after everything?
No.
So we're rooting against the Nuggets.
Oh, I'm actively cheering for the Heat.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
All right, just checking.
Why not?
Well,
I hadn't even thought about it. Honestly, I hadn't even considered rooting for one team or the other. I hadn't even considered watching it.
I haven't watched a minute of it, but I'm actively rooting for it.
Right. I told you the person I met last week who said that they thought the Sonics were back in Seattle.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I was going to go with this. Adam Silver stopped by the TNT set and... Shaq took that opportunity to ask for a little update on a potential Seattle team.
Ah.
Adam, last question. They want us to go, but I need this question answered. With everything going so well, do you see in the near future more expansion teams like you hear Seattle, you hear Las Vegas? Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility, and I think what we've said in the last few years, number one, we wanted to get our collective bargaining agreement done, so we've done that now. And the other thing, we wanted to understand what our new media rights packages are. And, you know, as Matt said, those negotiations will begin, you know, in earnest probably in this next spring. Once that's done, we'll turn to expansion. We don't have anything specific in mind right now, but I think it makes sense over time. You know, if you're a successful organization to continue to grow, there's no doubt there's a lot of great cities who are interested in having the NBA.
I mean, that's pretty promising.
That's encouraging. Yeah,
it's more encouraging than he's been in the past, mm-hmm. I would say. Look, as soon as the NBA is ready for expansion, they're coming here.
Yeah.
That is as done as a done deal gets. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, we've gone through this, I don't know how many times, but, you know, the owner of the Kraken is already in the NBA club. He is a minority small owner in the Celtics organization, Bonderman. So he's in the club.
Yeah.
The Lywickies did an incredible job of staying with the NBA throughout this entire process. They never got ahead of them. They built the building, which, by the way, is fantastic.
Don't they already have, like, NBA locker rooms?
They have NBA locker rooms, NBA everything. That building was always designed from day one to be ready for the NBA. And I know there's a lot of people out there who never thought that would happen, and this building was a disaster, and we should, you know, protest it at wherever you can. Well, none of that was true. The building is phenomenal. And they're going to get an NBA team as soon as they're ready to expand. Mm-hmm. So what is that? Probably, let's see. He said they get the deal done next year.
He said early spring they'll start the talks, the negotiation.
All right. So let's say a year from now, roughly, they end up getting a new TV media rights deal done. Takes them another year probably to figure out whether to expand. Right. So I would say 2 years from now is probably a target for when they'd announce, and then it probably takes another year after that to get your franchise ready to go. So I'd say 3 years.
26, okay.
Yeah, this is the, 22-23 season? That sounds right, don't you think?
Yeah.
25-26? Maybe 26-27.
Boo.
Yeah.
Seems too long. I mean, I do like, though, that his answer was clear. He's like, hey, I've always said it was going to be these three things.
Yeah.
This is done, this is starting in spring,
yeah.
And then we'll talk about it.
He's by far the best commissioner.
He sure seems to be, man. Straight shooter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just kind of tells it like it is, and straight shooter. The players don't seem to hate him. The owners don't seem to hate him.
He's consistent with punishments and standards, and yeah.
Does he not even get booed when he shows up at stadiums? That's insane. Every commissioner gets booed.
That's part of their job.
Seriously, that's almost a requirement.
I think Goodell likes it. It's weird. All right, quickly, do you want a little golf?
Yeah, of course I want golf.
The Memorial Tournament went to a playoff.
Yes.
Yesterday, after Denny McCarthy bogeyed hole 18.
Oof.
McCarthy missed his first putt on the playoff hole and opened the door for Victor Hovland to win it.
McCarthy. Oh. Caught the edge. And now Hovland has a putt for the win. From Oslo to Ohio, Victor Hovland is the champion.
That putt was so close to going
in.
Oh, dude, that's what Denny McCarthy does. He's a putter. Like, he's one of the better putters on tour, but doesn't necessarily have the full complement of a game to be one of the elites. But he played really well at a very challenging golf course this weekend. I was watching that live. It was fantastic theater and good. I like Victor Hovland. Poor guy. He's got some deal with some crazy clothing company that puts him in the ugliest shirts all the time. And he's always, and they ask him about it. They're like, dude, what are you wearing this week? He's like, look.
Like $3 million. I don't think he cares.
Oh, well, what he says is like, hey, man, they pay me to wear the clothes. Yeah. Like, I don't choose them. I just get paid to wear them. It's great.
Dan Flash's shirts.
Good for him. He was, that was a great appetizer. And I'm glad it ended when it did. If it had kept going, I wouldn't have been able to turn the channel and go see the end of the LPGA event and see Rose Zhang, who ended up winning as well. Also in a playoff. Because like McCarthy, she bogeyed late. And it looked like she was maybe in her first ever tournament that she had led from like the day, like from the start, that maybe she was going to collapse at the very end. And she had a couple of rough tee shots on 18 as they kept replaying the hole. And she found a way through it. It was pretty awesome. And eventually ended up winning on the second playoff hole. It was really cool. Fun to watch.
Huh?
And,
She's just a killer.
She's a killer. Especially when she was wearing her sunglasses. Unfortunately, she didn't have the shades on yesterday because the weather was kind of iffy in New Jersey. But like when you see her and she's got her shades on, she is a, you're right, stone cold killer in all the best ways. She's awesome. It. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Can I give you an update on the giant yacht that's in Lake Union?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, let me know what's going on with that.
Artifact, 80 meters.
80 meters.
260 plus feet.
Big yacht,
and it is
so it's almost a football field.
According to the website, it has 2.999 gross tons, making it the biggest volume 80 meter super yacht in the world.
Wow. Artifact.
BlackBerry Artifact. Has money like that. Like what else?
I don't know.
I don't think BlackBerry was that big.
I mean, the guy who started that, I'm sure he's done other things than just BlackBerry.
But... Yeah, well, I'm sure.
You know what's hard to spell is yacht.
Artifact. It's.
I got an artifact. I'm looking at this thing.
You found it. Because artifact spelled with an E.
Yeah. That's a big yacht, I think. I mean, it certainly looks large.
It says has since then been focused on software offerings and cybersecurity.
Yeah, so whatever.
I'm sure
you think he's still raking in the money?
Yeah. It's bonkers.
Yeah, that's a big yacht. You think he docks that thing over at Westward and goes over to have a drink
at night? It's not far. It's right down this, right around the corner.
You think you probably got to take a little dinghy over to Westward, though, if you want to go over there for dinner.
Do you think he's listening and we can get a tour?
I am sure this thing has got several dinghies.
No thanks. I took care of that at the press conference. I would still get sick on that yacht. So, like, nice as it is, if you were to ask me onto the yacht, I'd still get seasick. So I would say no to a trip on the yacht. Sorry.
So, well, it's the motor yacht of the year in 2021, so I'll give it some respect.
I wonder if Brady, with his place over his little boat that he lives on in Lake Union, I wonder if he's feeling some yacht envy.
He had to see it coming around through the locks.
Yeah, he's got a great view of the locks from where he is. All right. Brock will be in next. We are all gearing up towards some dunking, which will go on a little bit later in the show, I'm sure. But it's nice to get Brock back, and we'll do it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.